This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mary Arna. The South Island online tournament's done and dusted. Good numbers there, Barry. Finals separated into three different sections.
I think there were 39 tables all up, and it was good to see South Islanders winning the South Island pairs. Oh. Jeff Miller and Graham Stout, Julie Atkinson and Patrick Carter second, and Gary Chen and John Wang came in third.
Oh, that's then great. We mentioned all three of those names last week.
The plate was won by Daisy Liu, and I'm never going to get this name right, Xiao Liu. Let's have a go.
X-I-A-O.
How do you pronounce that?
I think that's a C, isn't it? Shell.
I don't know. And then in the consolation, Deborah Tangney and Nebojsa Jorovic. I probably didn't do very well at that one either.
Oh, that's Neb. He's from Wellington, isn't he? Well, I went to the Franklin Swiss Pairs, and that event, they too had good numbers. And that event was won by Franklin members, Sue Spencer and Bev Hinton, who won 5 of the 6 rounds. And second, again, Franklin people, Trevor Robb and Lynn Gerson. So well done.
How many tables there?
44 pairs, so 22 tables.
22 tables, that's good. I don't know what it is about Swiss pairs, but it certainly seems to attract the numbers. And this coming weekend, boy, are there a lot of Swiss pairs on? I don't know whether you've noticed, but they've got the Auckland, they've got the Bell Taylor, and it's the Swiss pairs. Dargaville have got an 8B Swiss pairs. Westport have got an 8B Swiss pairs. So they're certainly testing the theory that Swiss pairs are popular.
Oh, that's great.
I just want to talk about these Swiss pairs. There's something like 20 tables at Auckland, about 11 in Dargaville, and about 16 in Westport. So that's, what do we say? That's nearly 47 tables. 47 tables. That's around 188 players are going to be playing Swiss pairs on Saturday. Why? It's certainly a popular format of the game.
It is, yeah. It's quite fast-moving, too.
I think, to me, the thing that I think is attractive is that you play a match, whether it's 8 boards or 10 boards or whatever it might be, and then you either win that or you lose that. It moves you up or down, and then you get to play another 8-board match, and then another 8%. Instead of if you're not having a good day plodding around at the bottom of the field, not being able to win anything, you keep getting opportunities to win another match. There's always another chance for glory.
Now, tell me, was the Bell Taylor always a Swiss pairs event?
No, it wasn't. It's named after Bruce Bell and Eileen Taylor, a couple of luminaries of the game back in the day, Bruce Bell and Eileen Taylor. And yeah. That's who it's named after, but it was always just a normal
A pairs event, wasn't it? Yeah.
I don't know how long it's been a Swiss for. In fact, this could be the first time.
Yeah, I recall it actually always being a pairs event. Wasn't the bell for the woman and the tail, something like that, or the tailor for the
men? They still have those. I'm just looking at the flyer. So they've got the Bruce Bell silver for the best men's pair and the Eileen Taylor silver for the best woman's pair. So if you're a mixed pair, well, that's hard luck. All you can do is win overall. So I'm suggesting, Mariana, you should get a woman to play with you if you're going up.
I haven't asked a female to partner yet.
Oh, okay.
It's only a male, so only a mixed.
Pretty big numbers entered, I think.
How'd you go? Because you didn't say how'd you go.
Oh, we wound up on the plate. We had one bad session. Isn't it funny? Sometimes when you're not playing very well, you don't have any luck either. People seem to do the right thing against you all the time as well. We didn't play very well. We didn't have much luck either. So that happened. Then we had 3 reasonable sessions. There's only 2 sessions of qualifying, so it's a bit late by then.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
All right. Interestingly, they had no carryover into any of the events. It would have been a bit annoying if you'd scored a couple of 65s in the qualifying and then went back to scratch in the final and got beaten by somebody who'd scored 53 and 54, wouldn't it? That didn't happen, by the way, but I mean, it could do. I was a little surprised they didn't have a carryover. Must be a bit tricky.
I'm searching for a partner. I've just asked some of our friends if they want to go up and play, so we'll see. I might see. I see your name's there.
You think you might be going to Auckland on Saturday?
Yeah.
We might be able to get a carload.
Absolutely. Okay, I've got some questions. Of course, I've finished reading my book for February, so that's great. But one of the things that I thought I'd ask you, is there any difference when you play or you complete a hold-up play in no trumps as opposed to a hold-up play in a suit? Is there any difference?
Well, there is. You might want to hold up in a suit, but if there is an entry to dummy, an entry to the hand with a long suit, perhaps not quite so important to hold up. There are times when you should hold up in a suit as well. To know how many times to hold up, you do need your partner's help in that you need them to tell you how many cards they've got in the suit. Obviously,
Ah, right,
most of the top players, they signal the number of cards, whether they have an even number or an odd number in a suit. Most of them probably play what they call reverse count, whereas they play a high card followed by a low card. It says they have an odd number of cards in that suit. A low card followed by a high card says they have an even number of cards in that suit. Well, I suppose the same thing applies in no trumps, really. If they have got an entry to dummy or entry to the hand with a long suit, then, not quite so important to hold up because they're going to get there anyway. Sometimes it's hard to tell whether they have an entry to dummy. Sometimes it's easy to tell. Sometimes you think, well, that could be an entry or it might not be. If you're not sure if they've got an entry to dummy, it doesn't hurt to hold up anyway. It doesn't cost you anything to hold up for a round or two, just to exhaust one hand of the suit so they can't communicate with each other so easily.
Is there any formula or something that you could use to help you decide how many times you have to hold up?
No formula. You just need partners' help in telling you how many cards they have in the suit by giving you count or reverse count.
Ah, okay.
You can usually work out, if they tell you they've got an odd number, you can usually work out that it's three, or if they've got an even number, that it's two or four or whatever. And so it's not usually too difficult. If you don't have partners' help and you don't talk about what sort of count you give, and I'm picking there are an awful lot of people that don't, then you really won't have a clue.
And I've got another question to ask you. You're trying to figure out which defender is the dangerous hand and which defender is the safe hand. Is that by choice or you just take a real good stab?
No. Usually, if they attack your weak suit, the defenders attack your weak suit, you can usually tell by the cards they play which hand has the length in that suit. If somebody leads a low card, then they've probably got length in that suit. So that's the hand that you want to keep off lead when you're declarer. So you try and, well, you either take a finesse into the other hand or you just play a low card and you just cover whatever they play. If you're ducking in a suit to lose to the other hand, the safe hand.
So they don't communicate back to each
Yep,
other.
that's right.
Ah.
But of course, you've got to hold up. You've got to hold up, of course, before you do that. You've still got to hold up. There's all these things to think about. So hold
Heck.
up, count, danger hand. God, it's just a nightmare, isn't it?
It is. I find it much better to figure out what's happening when they lead touching ons. From Waikato, they generally their lead style is under lead. Whereas in Hamilton, the lead style, touching honours is overlead. What is it called when you underlead, like you've got king, queen, but you lead the queen promising the king? What is that system called?
I think that they're called journalist leads
Journalist?
or Roman.
Roman, that's the one. Roman leads. Queen promises the king, whereas we generally say top of a secret, so it would be king promising the queen. Is there any advantage?
I don't think so, no. In fact, I suppose it happens with everything, but I've seen some absolute disasters occurring when with those leads. But however, probably wasn't the lead's fault. It was probably the people that were operating them.
I see. That's what I've done. So for my bridge learning regime, I'm finished reading for the month of Feb, and I've got to find another book for March.
Well, I'm delighted you've brought up the subject of books
Really?
because I've got some exciting news.
Oh, cool. What you got?
So somebody in Hamilton, one of the Hamilton Bridge Clubs, has written a novel about bridge. A
Okay.
lot of it, or not all about bridge, but it's got bridge in it, and it's sort of set in the Hamilton Bridge Club. And it's now available as of today, I believe, on Amazon to purchase the online edition. And I believe there is a paperback coming out, but that probably won't be for another week or so. So the name of the book, appropriately enough for a bridge book, is Lethal Finesse.
That sounds like it belongs in the Dungeons and Dragons.
And the author is Jay Meverington. I've actually read one of the initial drafts of the book, and it looks pretty good. It was hard to put down.
Who was it?
Jay Meverington is the name of the author.
Oh, how cool. So we can get it on Amazon. And
I believe it's only $5 or $6. So that's for the online one. I don't know how much the paperback will be.
So check it out on Amazon.
So, indeed. So there you go. Lethal Finesse by Jay Meverington. It's a good read.
Colts in session. The Colts in session. Now, here come the judge. Here come
the judge. This week, Judge Julie, congratulations for the weekend's effort.
Thank you. Yes, enjoyed the event. Obviously, when you're doing well, you always enjoy it a bit better than when you're doing badly. So it was comfortable. Everything seemed to go very smoothly. There weren't any particular hiccups. I know that there were some issues. One player couldn't play the second day, and presumably there was a bit of running around to find a partner for someone. But there's always those sorts of things, and internet issues, which is always the case with online.
Right.
But it worked well and happily.
For anybody who doesn't know what we're talking about, that we're talking about the South Island Peers, and Judge Julian Bailiff came runners-up in the South Island Peers to Graham Stout and Jeff Miller. Well done to them.
Congratulations to Graham and Jeff.
A couple of questions for the week. One was, talking about claiming, some people never claim, or they find it difficult to claim, or they don't know how to state their line or whatever. Now, is it only the declarer that can claim, or what's the story there?
Anyone can claim. If you are a declarer, obviously, a dummy can't claim. All right, be really clear about this. Dummy is not allowed to claim. They are dummy. They're not allowed to be involved in the play of the hand. Once things have happened, then they can come to the party. So when you claim, you should be able to state a line. Very often people just say my hand is high or dummy is high because you've got all the best cards left. That's a reasonable statement of claim. It requires more than that. It requires that the person making the claim makes a statement of claim. That is really important, actually. And the same as if you're defending. You say, we're making the last blah, blah number of tricks. Your partner can prevent you from conceding a trick, but then there's information and some stuff happens around that. I mean, I've done it a couple of times. I'm sitting there. We know declarer's got two cards left in a suit because they've shone out of every other suit, and they're playing trumps one after the other, waiting for you to make a mistake. So I have pointed out, with a bit of a subtlety for me, I would imagine, that I can't throw away all my cards in the suit that they're holding on to, so I am going to make the last two tricks, or the last trick, rather than us going through the laborious performance of wishful thinking by people. Well,
I think some of us probably are a bit casual. I mean, I think on the weekend, I think I said on one of them, I just said, I'm keeping my king of hearts.
Yeah. And
that was going to take the last trick, but I mean, I didn't say any more than that.
So you can claim in defence. There are some issues if you misclaim when you're defending because your partner's information, they're not allowed. So you want to be pretty clear when you're defending.
Right.
Or declaring.
Yeah, or declaring, actually.
That's right.
Yeah. So because people have difficulty, a wide range of players, like at the club, some people have more difficulty seeing what's happening next than other people, all right? There's ability and I know some of the time I need it explained in a bit more depth because I'm just being a bit away with the fairies. You have to state a line of play, and ideally your opponents can follow that line of play, but if they can't, we call the director. The director will come to the table. The declarer will say what was said when the claim was made. And then that is the way that the cards will be played. Now, you can now, with the new laws, you can say that you would like the hand played out, but everyone at the table has to concur. And it is not something that is a benefit to everyone at the table, okay? The only benefit in playing it out lies in if the peer has made a bad claim, that all of a sudden they have a chance to correct it when they shouldn't get that chance at all. It's a bit of an oddity with the laws that you can ask for it to be played out now, but everyone, and that includes dummy, has to concur.
Okay.
Right. So if we go back, you've made a statement, all of this, blah, 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 everything's fine, I'm going to make the rest of these trips. And nearly always, 98% of the time, when there is a dispute about a claim, one of the defenders will say, but I've still got a trump, which the
Yep.
claimant has forgotten about. Okay. So then you look at all the hands, and nearly always there'll be another trick traded. Sometimes it's more. Sometimes it's not any because of the positioning of the hand and the fact that the clearer just can't go wrong all of a sudden. You cannot change what you claimed after someone says, no, I don't, oh no, that's not right. The clearer can't change their mind about the way they're playing it. And that's why you get the director to the table.
I'm a little surprised that the dummy can say, no, I don't want to play it out. I didn't think that would be one
Oh
of
no,
their
because
rights.
it's still the play. Every
Yep.
player at the table has to concur. So that is not about being declared a dummy. That is actually about everyone at the table agreeing that they will play the hand
An extra right for dummy. Woohoo!
out.
Dummies of the world unite.
At the point they're not playing it out, dummy is no longer dummy because there's been a claim. There's a point of reckoning there. Okay. If a claim is accepted, that will make any revoke that is occurred. That establishes any revoke that has occurred. So if someone's forgotten to follow suit the previous round and you claim and they accept it, then the revoke is established and the penalties will apply. Okay.
Okey-dokey.
So there's some little tiny bits that come in there.
Sometimes claims create, oh God, sometimes create they more problems than they're worth, it seems like.
Absolutely. I agree entirely with that.
But if the director makes a ruling in that situation or any other, and you don't like it or you disagree, what can you do? Apart from, you're not a storm out of the room?
No, actually, and what happens is that whenever the director's called to the table and they make a ruling, they need to be treated with a reasonable amount of respect and courtesy. All
You
right?
could walk out of the room politely and quietly.
No, you don't need to. You just say thank you for the ruling. Either I will reserve my right, or I am going, in some cases, really clearly, I
Oh.
want to appeal your decision. Now, clubs in general will have a process where decisions by the director can be appealed or reviewed, and there'll be a process that clubs will have where you can go through that process. I mean, none of us ever are right 100% of the time, no matter what we like to think.
Oh,
So
God, don't try telling Patrick that.
we're all fallible, all right? We all make bad decisions at times. And I remember going to an appeal at Congress when I was pretty young as a director and a person, and John Evatt turned around to me and said, what on earth were you thinking, Julie, when you made that ruling? It
Oh.
was just so bad, okay? It was just embarrassing. We don't get everything right, and sometimes we can get things epically wrong. But players are allowed to have a review. Now, if you don't like the director's decision because the law says that because of the revoke, two tricks were traded and you don't want that to happen, sorry, out of luck. If the ruling is correct in law, there is no appeal about that.
Okay.
It's written down in black and white. It's when we are using judgment as a director about the play of the hand or the outcome of a hand where our playing judgment is what is being used. And not all of us are good at playing. So there is a process that we have. And it should
Right.
be courtesy and polite, and no one needs to storm out or throw things or do whatever. It is just the process that there is.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, that sounds fair enough. If only everybody was always courteous and polite. It doesn't always
Oh.
seem to work that way, but
The
anyway, it should.
other one we get is when there's hesitations, all right? And everybody at the table will have a slightly different view of what actually happened at the table. And I know we all think our part of the story is right and everyone else is coloured, but actually everybody's is coloured by what they're doing at the time these things happened. And that's the one area that gets very emotive. And there is a really set process, which I think I went through last week. Same thing. I mean, again, it's the judgment of the director. If we don't agree, we can say that we want to appeal.
We're playing overseas, in in Argentina or wherever it was. One of the great things was having a camera at every table where the directors could go to and they could see just exactly how long everybody took to do whatever it was they did.
And what was
And
said?
but what really sort of amazed me was they'd come back and they'd say, oh, no, I never hesitated. And they'd say, well, actually, you hesitated for 36 seconds or whatever, because they
Yeah,
could see it on,
we can
it
see
just
it
goes to show that
with online.
I think the people weren't lying. They genuinely believed they hadn't hesitated.
That's right. And I mean, when we ask about a break in tempo when we're directing. And one of the things is if you say hesitation, people get their back up straight away. It's got better, but it's still a phrasing that people feel is accusing them of doing something wrong. And to be really clear, you know, you are allowed to take time to think. When we are thinking, most of us do not know how much time elapses. They're not aware. So generally, you get to the table, we say, you know, was there a break in tempo? Did you? And they'll say, no, but I did have something to think about. Well, if you are thinking about something, there's going to be a break in tempo. Yeah. That is what it's all about. It's not saying you've done something wrong. It's just saying, did it actually happen? And then the process reverts to the bidding and whether that may or may not be something that the vast majority of people would do. That is another thing that is independent. Everybody is saying, I would always bid this. Well, some people bid stuff that is absolutely amazingly incredible. I will not go too far into that. And not anyone else would. Unfortunately, if their partner hesitates, they're in trouble. We're not saying that they wouldn't do it or that they shouldn't, but we're saying that because, it, you know, there's a different standard once somebody has taken some time about what happens next.
Yeah, well, or as a director once told a friend of mine when their partner had hesitated, your partner has cooked your goose.
You can sit there sometimes and you look at your head and you think, if you take much longer, I really am not going to be a happy person because I know what I want to bid. And I know that once you've taken your 20, 30, 50, 3 minutes, half an hour or whatever, yeah, I'm not going to be able to bid it anymore.
Just bear in mind that if you've got nine spades to the ace, king, queen, you're still allowed to bid them.
100%, right? Absolutely. Okay.
What about when the person who's doing the scoring of the tablets or the bridge mates, and they take forever and they become dummy and they take so long, you're looking at them thinking, could you just put the dummy down and then muck around with it later?
I agree, right?
What do you say?
If you are dummy, people that are slow, there are a few things they can do to make life quicker. And the first one they can do is when they are dummy, they can put down their hand.
Yep.
And pick up the tablet and put the whatever. Yep. And they also cannot score on their own personal score sheet. Patrick and I have both taken score sheets away from people because they are so focused on doing that, that they are holding up the entire room. Most people that play slowly, apart from having the odd hand that is diabolical and requires a lot of thought, right? Most people have habits that make them slower. You know, some people pick up one card at a time. Now, I know some people need to do things in a certain way. So that's fine, that's them. But once it slows down everybody, there are things that can be done. And that one there, putting down dummy. I mean, some people that aren't even using tablets, they're writing it down on their personal score sheet. Then they put, and you suddenly think, why can't I use this time to see your dummy, you know?
Mm. Oh, no.
You should be grateful that Rafael Nadal doesn't play bridge. By the time he'd finished bouncing the ball and just wiping his hair back and picking out his underwear, he'd never be ready to play.
You reckon that if we sit at the table and chat, as I think it's odd numbers for Rafael, if I have that right, or there's a certain number that you have to do, and then we picked up our cards. Imagine the screaming. Don't anyone do this.
And you prompt them, they go, oh, yep, okay, and they do it. And then the very next time it happens again, and you're like, oh.
We all have idiosyncrasies.
Especially you two. Okay, thank you, Julie.
Thank you, Jules. Catch you next time.
G'day, folks. Here we are in Yarra Park, home to the MCG, the Melbourne Cricket Ground. A ground famous for some of the great feats in various different sports, especially cricket, obviously, Aussie rules football. It was here in 1984 that Sir Vivian Richards smashed a double ton, one of the greatest test knocks you'll ever see.
Don't forget, we're going to be talking with Phil Young about their inaugural MCG Swiss Pairs event. Should be a fantastic day. And like we've said before, it's sold out. Woohoo! You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up,
Know when to walk away.
This week is a sort of a two-part one, and it's about what do you do over one no Trump. I had a group that I was talking to the other day, and I was amazed how many people over one no Trump, they really didn't have much system at all. So I believe you can play natural if you like. If you play natural, what's double? It would be probably normal to play that a double of one no Trump would be sort of 15, 16 plus and designed to penalize, not to get partner to bid. Like Landy's probably one of the oldest and, you know, best known methods over one no Trump. So everything's natural, but two clubs says, I've got both majors. Pick your best major. Now, you usually have 5-4 or 4-5, but, you know, if the vulnerability is in your favor and you're feeling a bit frisky, you might do it with 4-4. For that reason, it's quite good to have the follow up too. So two clubs says, pick a major partner. Now, if you're sitting there and you've got three of each and you think, well, I'd really like to know where the partner's got five or one of them. A lot of people play that the two diamond response there just says, I've got equal length in those two suits. You pick your longest one. So double is penalties. Everything's natural, but two clubs as majors, quite a good little thing to add in there. But even more importantly, and I've talked about this before, but there are still thousands of people out there that blithely go about their business and not worry about it till it happens. If you get doubled in one no Trump, you need to know what you are doing.
Yep.
You can play statement and transfers if you like, but if you're sitting there and you get doubled in one no Trump and you've got a two count and you've got five or six of a minor, don't come crying to me if you go for 1100, because you probably will. So there should be a way to escape to a long minor, like, for instance, redouble. Redouble should say, I've got a long minor. And perhaps you could say, pass says, I haven't got a long suit and I don't want a statement. I haven't got a long minor. So bid something or redouble and we'll bid our suits up the line. Have some sort of agreement that when you get doubled in one no Trump, you have to get the hell out of Dodge. Sometimes you'll have enough points where you think partner's got a chance to make it, but you often won't. And it's too late then to think, I should have had a discussion with my partner about what happened if we get doubled in one no Trump. Maybe Barry was right all along.
Maybe he was. It's funny because it does come up, doesn't it? It
comes up all the time, and it's no use worrying what you're going to do when it actually happens. It's too late then.
That sounds really good. I might go through my system card and just see. Okay, Ben, well, that's it from us for this week. I might see you on the way up to Auckland.
We might even be in the same car. Who knows?
We could do, yeah.
And I'll let you know. W and one no Trump while we're up there. Are you going to know what to do? That's good.
Of course I will.
I will look forward to it.
All right. Well, take care, everybody.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring Bridge from beginner to international nationwide.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.